This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
A few seconds away from switching to the redundant sense sequencer. T-minus 27 seconds. We have gone for redundant sense sequencer start. T-minus 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15, 14, 13, T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. We've gone for main engine start. We have main engine start.
Ladies and gentlemen, rock and roll.
And with that, a revolution was born. Welcome, everyone, to this special episode here on PlaceToBeNation.com. Here on the Pop Feed, my debut on the Pop Feed. For those that maybe are new to me, I'm usually on the other two feeds, and you're listening to some of the great comic stuff we have here, music stuff, the Glenn Butler Hour Spectacular, and some other great shows here. My name is Scott Criscolo. I am the co-founder of PlaceToBeNation.com. I am the co-host of the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, also host of Place to Be Nation's main event. And usually you see me in the wrestling side of the building, which is usually where the most floors are. But tonight, things are a little different because I've been waiting to do a podcast like this for quite a while. Because today, if you're listening to it today, it is Monday, August 1st, 2016, which means one of the biggest hunks of many of our childhoods is 35 years old today. And you heard when it was born. On August 1st, 1981, something changed for television, for music, and for radio forever. And that is, of course, the birth of MTV. Most younger people are like, well, didn't MTV have, isn't that Real World and, you know, Cribs and some other dreadfully unwatchable crap. But MTV is a lot older than some of you may think it is. And tonight here, in this special episode on PlaceToBeNation.com, we're going to look at the history and the legacy that is music television. But I am not doing it alone. I handpicked these two gentlemen because both of them are, A, music junkies like myself, and B, close to or slightly older than me, so they actually mostly remember when it was born. Let me bring in this guy. If you don't know his voice, he is a contributor to PlaceToBeNation.com. He's been on many of the wrestling shows and a couple of sports shows, and like me, he was alive and watched on August 1st, 1981, Mr. J. Arsenio D'Amato.
I want my MTV.
I want my MTV. Sting, John Waite, the Go-Go's. Ah, the Go-Go's. Love the Go-Go's. John, pleasure to have you on tonight. You and I have done a myriad of podcasts together, mostly wrestling. But tonight, tonight's an honor because not everybody I know is as cherished about this moment as I was when it launched. So it is good to have you on, and we're going to talk a lot about the pre-dating of music videos and what happened after August 1st, 1981. The other guy joining me tonight, also one of my favorite people on the planet, also a music junkie. Him and I have to have a podcast about simply lead guitarists, Mr. Jason Greenhouse.
Thank you so much for having me, Scott. If I can quote an individual who took a big part in the early days of MTV, and that is a Mr. David Lee Roth. What is rock and roll without a little drama?
Correct.
I think we're going to talk a lot about that tonight.
That is for sure. Greeny, of course, has joined us on the Place to Be podcast, on the main event. He's on Extra Point. He's on Evolution, a myriad of shows. He's been on Live Watches everywhere. So, but he's also, I think this is your first appearance on the Pop Feed.
It is.
Too. So there we go. So hopefully we will entertain you with a little history. You heard that clip That clip dates back to, let's see, I think it long, probably 11:59 and 40 seconds on, I don't know what day of the week it was. I think it was a Friday night into Saturday morning, July 31st, 1981. And then when the clock struck midnight, everything changed. But one thing, guys, music videos didn't start in 1981. That's for sure. Otherwise, it would have had nothing to play. If you want to go back in time, you can go back to, and this is no surprise, because they were revolutionary at everything. One of the first instances in history of music videos being produced was by the Beatles. Big shock. They used to promote, you do little videos to promote their records back in the mid-60s. And then a lot of people think that pretty much A Hard Day's Night was a movie-length video, which, if you've watched it, it pretty much was. And of course, they did the live All You Need Is Love, where they're all sitting around with all the, you know, flower power chicks in the sitting Indian style, and I'm sure John boffed half of them after the song ended. But that was technically a music video. And as time progressed, I know a lot of record companies in the 70s did little, you know, little half-assed clips to promote songs and promote albums that were coming out. Nugent was big on videos. Led Zeppelin, who somebody in this roundtable said was overrated, had music videos. you and I might have a separate podcast on that too, Mr. Greenhouse. But they were never really used to watch for you know, public consumption, I guess you could say. They were used in the industry, you know, to pimp albums and such. D'Amato, do you remember, like, you know, when you were a kid in the late 70s, even maybe before or slightly after MTV launched, were there any outlets for you living out on the island where there were, like, music videos and TV shows about music? Do you remember anything like that when you were a kid?
Yeah, once in a while something would pop up, like on shows, maybe not American Bandstand and stuff, but there were shows like that that were short-lived that instead of, you know, showing, they would show, like, a performance, which was, like, you know, like a video.
Mm.
And as a matter of fact, in the MTV book, I Want My MTV, which me and Greeny read that we're going to reference a lot.
Oh, yeah.
There was Tom Petty said, you know, look, instead of, you know, us going on the Merv Griffin show, we're just going to do a video for Refugee and we're just going to send them the video. And then they aired it on the Merv Griffin show. So mm-hmm. stuff like that. So instead of, you know, just going there and performing live in front of a bunch of old, you know, farts, they sent a video, and, you know, that was the way of, you know, of getting on and getting that performance, you know, when they have a new album, and that was their way of promoting it. So like on random shows, you would see something like a Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, and I forget the shows exactly, but they would just, you would see them randomly, and it was like, oh, you know, pretty cool. But there wasn't really like a, you know, like a surge of momentum saying, oh, you know, we need to see, you know, these videos 24 hours a day. So, but eventually it evolved to that.
Right, right. I mean, now overseas, there were obviously one of the more popular shows in Britain, which you could say is the British version of American Bandstand, called Top of the Pops. They sometimes would play like rudimentary music videos when the live artists were not in the building. Greeny, do you remember any different shows when you were a kid? Besides, like, even slightly after MTV, because not everybody had it at first, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Right. I mean, being a little bit younger than you guys, I can vaguely remember maybe like American Bandstand and stuff would show music videos. Like John said, like when instead of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers going on the Merv Griffin show, they would send in the video. American Bandstand would do the same thing where maybe like before so-and-so came on to actually perform, they would show a music video of them doing a different song or something like that. That's the only other outlet that I can think of. Maybe like a Friday night video type thing. I don't know if that came along after MTV launched, maybe late 70s, early 80s, maybe something like that, but definitely American Bandstand.
Mm. Yeah, American Bandstand. Even Soul Train, which was like the
right,
kind of
right.
The soul hip hop version of American Bandstand. Australia had a show called Countdown. In 1974, a guy by the name of Gary Van Haas, who was the VP of Televac Corporation, introduced a concept to distribute a music video channel to record stores. Now, I remember this very vividly. And promoted the channel Music Video TV to distributors and retailers in May 74 issue of Billboard magazine. The channel, which featured video disc jockeys, signed a deal with U.S. Cable in 1978 to expand its audience and retail to cable. The service is no longer active by the time MTV launched. There was a record store. And guys, if there was anything I could pull from my childhood, besides Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse the Body Ventura, if I could pull anything from my childhood and bring it back to now, I had a record store in my town, or the one town over, but literally like on this main strip, Route 1, called Peaches. And Peaches was one of those old school wood front record stores that had the big album covers, you know, on the front. And you walked in, and the walls were wood. And, of course, the whole place smelled like pot because, you know, that's what everybody did on their break. Nobody ate lunch. So you could smell it from the back room. And it was just nothing but albums and concert T-shirts. As a matter of fact, now I wonder, Greeny and guys, Greeny, you lived obviously near the Mid-Hudson Civic Center, and D'Amato, you were near Nassau Coliseum. But where I grew up, near the New Haven Coliseum, if a band played New Haven the night before, Peaches, which was a national chain, but this was like I think the only one in this side of this part of the country, would buy any remaining concert T-shirts that were not sold and sell them at half price the next day. Which was kind of cool, because I remember seeing Tull. This is very young. I was like 7. This is like 1979, 80. I used to remember going in with my brother, and I'd see Tull and Styx and REO Speedwagon and not Ozzy because he wasn't solo yet. Sabbath, Journey, you know, bands like that. I mean, just, and the T-shirts were cool, but they were always like $3 instead of whatever it was in 1978. Imagine a T-shirt now, guys, for $8 at a concert. Ha! You couldn't buy a sleeve for $8 now.
Yeah, unfortunately,
it's crazy.
You can't buy a beer for $8 now.
I know, that's true. I remember going to a concert. I saw Paul McCartney at the new Yankee Stadium in 2000. I think it was 2011, and they had a jacket with leather sleeves, like a varsity jacket. $375. Utterly ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous. And the T-shirts were like $40. In any event, so really, you relied a lot on radio back in the day. And now, of course, we guys, another reason I specifically wanted you guys on, besides the fact you're awesome, is that you both grew up in the tri-state area, and we had a very, here in the Connecticut, New York, New Jersey markets, we had some very influential radio stations back in the day. On the AM dial, we had WABC 770, which is a very influential top 40 station. 66 WM, or as
WNBC. I'm,
yeah, I gotta do it the IMS way. 66 WNBC.
WNBC.
Oh, and after that, you gotta go. All right. All right, I-Man. Smirnoff and Blow. I think that was a cut one of his comedy albums. Anyway, but 77 WABC, big station for music. You had Imus in the morning, you had Stern in the afternoon, you had Soupy midday, and you had like the night was like a bunch of whack jobs. Joey Reynolds and Michael Sarzynski. I loved ABC, and I lived in Connecticut. I loved listening to NBC. And then on the FM dial, you had, of course, PLJ, which was very top 40-ish and very, you know, kind of pop. Billboardish, and then you had NEW, which was kind of the AOR, you know, long form album, you know, a lot of Yes, you know, they would play Born to Run from beginning to end. They'd play Who's Next from beginning to end. So here in the tri, and I had stations here in Connecticut, 99 Rock WPLR, HCN up in Hartford. So we had a lot of, you know, here in the tri-state area, guys, we had a lot of great radio stations. Now you, D'Amato, you had what? BAB? Is that what you listened to as a kid?
Yeah. Well, PLJ definitely, and BAB and NEW.
Yeah.
And also LIR, which was more new wave-ish. And that fit right into MTV because I was, you know, a lot of Duran Duran
yep.
and Human League, you know, right into that. You know, and all those a lot of those crazy one-hit wonders.
That's right. Kaja Goo Goo.
That we'll get into. Yeah.
Too Shy
sure.
Shy.
Sure.
So... Going into the early 80s, exactly. Going into the early 80s, you know, rock radio was still king. So the concept of a channel, of a TV channel that just played music was unheard of. We were just getting accustomed, guys, to ESPN. ESPN was only, what, a year and a half old? at that point? And what were they doing? Bocce and AWA. So, you know, it's like, actually probably, I don't think they did wrestling that early, but, so the concept of a cable channel playing videos, just music, instead of putting the stereo on, you put your TV on, and if you're cleaning or doing homework or, you know, banging your girlfriend or whatever, you know, you had MTV on instead of PLJ or NEW. The concept is just mind-boggling.
Little
Benny Mar. I don't think Benny Mardones played on PLJ.
Fortunately, not part of my youth.
I guess I was too young for that too.
Two out of three.
Yeah, if I was doing that at the age of seven, DCF would have been knocking on the door. Now, but even like my brothers or whatever. So, 1981. It actually goes back to 1977, and again, you guys obviously read the book. Warner Cable, which was a division of Warner Communications, launched a two-way interactive cable television system, Cube, Q-U-B-E, in DeMottos, in my favorite wrestling town, the iconic Columbus, Ohio. See, look at that. Pizza Men and two-way music video channels. Nothing better than Columbus, Ohio. One of these specialized channels was called Sight on Sound, a music channel that featured concert footage and music-oriented television programs, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the original programming format was pretty much the guy who created MTV, Bob Pittman, who was president and CEO of MTV Networks. And yes, there'd be more than one eventually. He hosted a 15-minute show called Album Tracks on Channel 4, guys, in the late 70s, NBC TV, so Channel 4 in the late 70s. So, when you first turned it on, Mr. Greenhouse, how long had – before we get to the memorable videos, do you remember the first time you turned it on?
The first time I had exposure to it, my father used to exercise in the morning. We had a finished basement. He would go downstairs and exercise before work, just simple weight set and stuff.
Right.
And I went downstairs. This has to be mid-84.
Okay.
So I went downstairs before school one morning. He's exercising. He had the TV on, and I saw something that, you know, I'd heard the song, and I'm seeing this music video with it. And it was Van Halen's Jump. And I was like, you know, I referenced him, you know, when we first came on, David Lee Roth. I'm like, so this is what this guy looks like, you know?
Yep.
And immediately after that, one of the VJs came out. It might have been Mark Goodman, actually. He segued into Every Breath You Take by the Police, and that was next. And I heard that, I'd heard that song on the radio, too. And I'm probably 5 years old at the time, and what the hell is this channel? You know, I'm 5 years old. I have no idea, you know, what cable is except for, you know, I was just getting into wrestling and cartoons, and that's it.
Right.
So that was my first exposure to it. And I was just like, whoa, you know.
Yeah.
The songs sound even better when you're watching them.
Yep. Now, D'Amato, you're a little older than Greeny and actually a little older than me. Do you remember when you first popped it on? Did you watch it when it launched?
Oh, no, it wasn't available right away for us in August of 81. It took about a year for it to come to my cable in 82. Because I remember in August 81, you know, MTV started going back in history, but we didn't get it right away. Mm-hmm. So then in 82, they, it really wasn't really picking up, and it looked like a failure. They were losing a lot of money, and they went for this massive promo campaign where they got like Townsend and Mick Jagger and the Police, you know, to do those iconic commercials saying, I want my MTV. And all of a sudden, you know, me and everybody, well, we're all seeing these commercials. We're like, what the hell is this MTV? I want my MTV. And they're like, call your cable operator and demand MTV. And you know, the cable operators got swamped. And that was, and eventually we got to it in about the summer of 82.
Okay.
The first video I saw was Rock and Roll Hall of Famer's Haircut 100. Love Plus One. One of those classic that, you know, that's when I think MTV, that's one of those classic one-hit wonders that just the MTV made like famous for like 2 months or whatever.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have one-hit wonders up the wazoo today, guys.
Yeah.
I agree. I actually watched the launch on tape. My cousin actually, they live further north here in Connecticut, and they actually, their cable company had it. So
when did you get it right away, or did you have to?
No, I didn't get it. I got it about when you got it, D'Amato, because I remember it was summertime. It was summertime. I was pretty much 82, maybe 83. I don't totally – my summers blended to like 86. So I would say probably like 80 – you're probably right. I think
it was probably 82 because very few people got it when it first came out. But then after they launched that campaign in early 82, like I said, with Townsend and Jagged, those commercials were saying, call your cable operator. And they just went crazy. And that's when it blew up and it came everywhere like in 82.
Yep. The first video I ever watched, first video Greeny ever watched was Jump by Van Halen, which is fairly iconic and, of course, one of the greatest albums of all time. D'Amato, for those that don't know, was listening to this.
Yes.
The song is fucking terrible.
No, it's not. It's amazing. How dare you?
Boom, boom. But this is the new wave kind of stuff that started in the early 80s. A lot of bands loved MTV for this specific reason. There we go, a little Love Plus One.
Yeah, that's what I can relate to. That describes my love life. Love plus one. Zero plus one equals one.
God, D'Amato, don't depress this audience already.
All right.
The first video I ever watched, speaking of two depressing men, was Did It in a Minute. D'Amato.
Oh, Did It in a Minute. Jesus. I wish I could get the chance to do it in a minute, but yeah.
Was Did It in a Minute. We already went off the rails. Did It in a Minute by Hall & Oates was the first video I actually ever saw live on MTV, and I'm pretty sure it was summer of 82. So yeah, you're probably right, D'Amato. I would say for all of us guys, probably about a year in was when MTV came in the Northeast. I don't even know what – I can't even fathom what record cable companies did have it early. Probably not a lot. Because remember the big deal about – and I wonder if this was a if this was a technical thing, but the whole big thing was your TV had to be in stereo.
Yep.
And was even in 1981, no TVs were in stereo? You had to get a box. Remember Mark Goodman used to – by the way, you're wondering who the hell Mark Goodman is. Let's get to that first before we talk about the equipment. When MTV launched, you heard the open. Right after the end of the little bed there, up came Mark Goodman. For years, I always thought I thought the first guy was Alan Hunter. But no, the first guy was Mark Goodman. Even though he was recorded last, apparently. That's at least the order I heard. There were five VJs, video jockeys. The original taglines of the current channel were... Do you remember what Mark Goodman said, Mr. Greenhouse?
What was it? We're going to change music the way you view it forever or something like that.
Never look at music the same way again.
Yeah.
You were close. No, you were close. On cable, in stereo. There were five VJs, that were picked from mostly around the country, but I think a lot of them were local. You had Mark Goodman, who was the first guy he launched. Then the second person you saw was Alan Hunter. I think he was a New Yorker. Then, speaking of Did It in a Minute, D'Amato, Martha Quinn. Oh, I love Martha Quinn. Love Martha Quinn. Then, probably the coolest of the bunch, and the one with the most experience, and sadly he's no longer with us, the great J.J. Jackson, who had the most experience. He was an L.A. jockey, I think. He passed away in 2004 from cancer, which sucks. Because he was like, you would tell he was the one who like got all the radio groupies. He had the nicely permed afro and he had the red leather jacket and he was slick. And not actual slick, although J.J. Jackson could probably get out of a car to Jive Soul Bro, but because he was. And a guy that I know D'Amato would have macked all over, the great Nina Blackwood.
Oh, yeah, that's my type. I can tell what your type. You like the girl next door, Martha Quinn, but I go for the bad girl.
You like the
Nina Blackwood.
You like the girl in the corner.
Yeah, I want the one I get a better chance of doing nothing with. But, you know, at least it gives me hope.
So they would introduce, go in and out of videos. That's all they did in the beginning.
Yeah, they got all the demographics covered. You know, they got J.J. Jackson, the brother. They got the blonde, you know, beach-like pretty boy. They got Mark Goodman with the hair and the girl next door. And, of course, the sexy vixen, Nina Blackwood.
So vixen.
They got everything covered. Yeah.
All right, so we know who we like. Greeny, break the tie. Nina, Martha.
Ah, Martha Quinn, man.
Ah,
damn,
oh, man.
That's right. You go.
Easily.
D'Amato doesn't want to share anyway. So really all they did was go in and out of videos. Now, they would do the occasional, like, music news bit. So they had people behind the scenes doing, like, music news stories about concert tours and this other, you know, stuff like that. I think I remember the first video, the first giveaway or first contest. It was either Journey or REO Speedwagon, one or the other. It was either Journey's Escape Tour or REM's, or REM, REO Speed. We'll get to REM because they were a big part of this network, you know, decade later. REO Speedwagon's High Infidelity, by the way, of course, both tremendously awesome albums. And of course, the very first video ever. Now, this is an interesting point too, D'Amato, because you talked about your iconic pals from Haircut 100. The very first video of all time was by a little-known band called
Green Buggles.
Or
oh, sorry.
Either of you.
Sorry, the Buggles.
The Buggles. And the Buggles who... And the song... Here's an interesting thing. The song was, I don't know, 4 years old or something like that. The song, of course, was called, ironically, Video Killed the Radio Star. It was also the first video directed by Russell Mulcahy, first appearance of members of Yes, and the first new wave music video. So, Greeny, what'd you think of that? You know, you could have picked something very normal, and the second video, which we'll get to in a minute, was something that you would think would be something a little more mainstream. They saved that for the second video, which would be You Better Run by another hot, gorgeous vixen, Pat Benatar. Why do you think they picked a song like Video Killed the Radio Star by this unknown band of British misfits to fire off the network?
I think it was a really good tie-in with the whole purpose of MTV that, you know, you have another outlet besides the radio now to hear your favorite songs. And on top of that, it also was showing people that we're not just going to counter to, you know, top 40 and, you know, your mainstream stuff. You're going to hear stuff like this that you've never heard before, and you might like it.
Mm. What do you think, D'Amato? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it was just basically the title. And also, just to hop on what Greeny said, just to, like, hey, we're going to expose new people. It's not just going to be the same old people you listen to here. We're going to expose you to different types of music. So, but the title definitely had like 80, 90% of it. And plus, the video is different and it's visual. So it's original.
It was. Oh, it was very original. It was very original. And then the second video that aired was You Better Run by Pat Benatar, which I'll probably play that clip later. The third video, by the way, You Better Run was the first video by an American artist, of course. As I mentioned, the Buggles are British. Short clip of this video was featured in the first promo ad for MTV, which was broadcast just prior to the start of the video. It was also the first cover song played on MTV. I didn't even know You Better Run was not originally Pat Benatar's song.
Me neither.
I didn't know that at all. You know what? Let me click on it. Who did do that song first? I'm now completely fascinated. It was first done by the Young Rascals.
Wow.
It reached number 20 on the U.S. charts in May of 66. No shit. Wow. You learned something new here on PlaceToBeNation.com. I didn't know that. Going down the list quickly, the next one was a song by a guy that all three of us know very well, Rod Stewart. The song was called She Won't Dance With Me, which I don't really remember. Phil Chen was the first non-white musician to appear on MTV. I think he was Rod Stewart's bassist, and he was obviously Asian. And She Won't Dance With Me was also the first video for an album track to be played, because, again, it was I had never heard of it. So, kind of fascinated.
Yeah, when I went over those first 30, there's about a good 9 to 10 of them that I have no remembrance of.
And then I became, and then I fell in love with a few of the songs. I'll get to as we go down the list here. The next song was one that everybody knew at the time because it was a great band who was kind of in a state of turmoil, and that was the Who's "You Better You Bet," which was on like every fucking 20 minutes for like 3 years. It was also the first video that aired twice. It was the 4th and 54th video. It was also the first video that aired in black and white.
It was off the album It's Hard. I just threw a batting practice fastball. Right?
That is true. Now, mind you, this was, what, 3 years after Keith Moon's death. So the Who was kind of in a state of flux, and I think they would announce their farewell tour, which obviously didn't happen because I saw them twice in the 2000s. So one of them with a guy on the show. Next song was Little Susie's on the Up by PhD, who I've never heard of. The next song is funny because it's one of those songs that I never thought MTV would even play. It was by Cliff Richard, who was one of those kind of 50s and 60s British teen heartthrobs. The song was called We Don't Talk Anymore, and I remember this song playing on the radio all the time. And if you hear it, and if either of you guys don't know the song, if you hear it, you'll know exactly what it is. Nah, I used to hear it all the time on the radio when I was a kid. Then Brass in Pocket by The Pretenders, another new wave song. Yep. Time Heals by Todd Rundgren. Let me tell you something. And my PIC on the Place to Be podcast, JT Rosero, because we're both a couple of, well, the three of us, well, actually the four of us, we're going to get you into a two greenie, are all big time yacht rockers.
Oh, I'm into it, baby.
Yeah, right? Todd Rundgren is on a lot on Yacht Rock. And JR had no idea who the hell he was, and now he loves like all of his songs. And this is another song. I'm telling you, find Time Heals, and you're going to be like, holy shit, this is a good... The guy was an incredible musician anyway. He was one of those ones that was almost too smart for his own good, and maybe he didn't have a lot of mainstream stuff in the 70s, but another guy that MTV kind of helped. There were a lot of artists that MTV helped. And there was one artist in particular that MTV killed. We'll get to him in a minute. The next video was legendary because it was the first on-air gaffe, and that was Taken on the Run by REO Speedwagon, because after a few seconds, the tape snapped, and it went to snow. I remember that very vividly. Another great song, Rockin' the Paradise by Styx. Love that song.
Oh, yeah.
When Things Go Wrong by Robin Lane of the Chartbusters. Never heard of them. First Boston-based band. History Never Repeats by Split Enz. Never heard of them. Didn't hear them at the time anyway. I know them now. Hold On Loosely by 38 Special. Fantastic song.
Oh, yeah.
Just Between You and Me by April Wine. Anybody ever hear of April Wine? Have you ever heard of them, Greeny?
Yeah, they play them a lot on Ozzy's Boneyard.
They do, right? You know D'Amato, right?
Nah.
Never heard of them? They're Canadian. And they're kind of like a funky... I don't know. What would you say, Greeny? They're like a...
To me, they're like real early Motley Crue. Not quite hair band yet, almost.
And not
like...
ridiculously heavy either, per se.
Right.
But, like, this song is not ridiculously heavy. Speaking of heavy, though, in a couple songs, Iron Maiden would make their debut with the actual song Iron Maiden. There's a video I loved hearing all the time. Run to the Hills. Oh, a great video.
Classic.
And then REO Speedwagon, one of my favorite songs, "Keep on Loving You," tremendous song. Anyway, we go down the line. You can go on to Wikipedia; they have the whole list.
You're gonna go to number 29.
I'm gonna go to number 29, which is How could I not go to number 29? The iconic Baker Street. Yes, Yacht Rock Heaven, right there. First video by a Scottish musician. Yes, Jerry Rafferty, Baker Street. What a great song. In the Air Tonight. God, you guys realize that how old that song is? I thought In the Air Tonight came out like in 85. The song was out in 81.
Yeah, Phil had already got
Phil was ahead of his time. He was ahead of his time.
Yeah, and when did Miami Vice start? Not for
probably
years, right?
84, 85.
So the song was like 4 years old. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it held up really nicely.
Yeah. So the thing with MTV back in the day was music videos – that helped give unknown artists. I mean, you listened. We've read you these bands, and I bet you half of them you don't even know who the hell any of them are. But at the time, MTV really promoted kind of bands that out of nowhere. Now, the big story, the number one reason was, and we don't want to give them too much credit. They really had nothing to play, so I mean, they had to get what they had, which means most of the songs were either just out or really old. Now. As the decade progressed, obviously we had an issue early on, and this was a big controversy, and it didn't really hit me until I watched the episode of the 80s on CNN, the 80s documentary series that they did, when they talked about MTV, that there was a race problem early on. Now, you guys read the book, so I'm going to defer to you. D'Amato, I'll start with you. what was some of the, what came up to the surface with that issue early on?
Well, basically, they weren't playing any Black Odyssey. I mean, it wasn't really any mystery. That was just their policy, was blatantly, we're not going to play any Black Odyssey. Then finally, in 1983, they played a Herbie Hancock Rocket, which ironically he doesn't really appear in the movie. So.
Yep. Yeah.
When Michael Jackson when Thriller blew up, CBS Records gave him an ultimatum. They said, if you don't play Michael Jackson, then we're pulling all our artists off. So that's when they finally caved in, and you know, and they played and Beat It and Billie Jean sort of started blowing up.
Right.
But otherwise, it really wasn't nothing complicated about it. They were just like, we don't play Black artists. And like I said, that was very jarring when you look back on Bowie. You know, tried to punk. It was Mark Goodman, right? But
yes.
Bowie said, "I don't understand, you know, why your station doesn't play it." And at least Mark Goodman stood up to him and said, "Well, our demographics are in the South, and a lot that don't that aren't fans of that type of music." So. But he put Mark Goodman in a bad spot. But he stood up to him a little bit. But yeah, but I was
yeah. The select few who were in MTV's rotation were Michael Jackson. Because there was some I think occasionally there was a pre-Thriller video, maybe Rock With You from Off the Wall. Mm-hmm. By the way, on a side note, music-wise, I know Thriller is the album that like melted the universe, but Off the Wall is a great album.
Oh,
I just want to preface it that. Is. Off the Wall is a great album.
Yeah, but they didn't really. I don't remember seeing anything Off the Wall. I just remember that Beat It was really the first one to get heavy play. And then people saying, "Oh, it was only because Eddie was on guitar." So
yeah, that was true too. There had to be a caveat to everything.
But then Billie Jean was getting a lot of love, and that was it. After that, he just opened the doors.
Yeah, exactly. No doubt. And like Billie Jean, which came out before Beat It. What are we playing? Ice Cream Man by Van Halen in the background.
Mr. Softy, I'm sorry.
All flavors and push-ups too. I'm your ice cream man, baby. Stop. I love that song. Oh my God, do I love that song. I'm gonna turn it down.
Right by the house.
All right. So
you
Michael
guys
Jackson.
Want anything? Yeah.
Yeah, you got a pocket rocket? Oh. Michael Jackson, Prince, because 1999 was big early on. Little Red Corvette was big early on. Eddie Grant. Oh, come on, Electric Avenue.
Of course,
Electric Avenue, man.
Donna Summer, I don't remember a lot of early Donna Summer. Musical Youth, was that Past the Duchy?
Past the Duchy, yeah. Donna Summer, she works hard for the money.
She works hard for the money.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, MJ opened up the floodgates. And
the very first people of color to perform on MTV was a band called The Specials, which was an integrated lineup, white and black musicians and
great.
Vocalists.
Yeah, ska.
Rack
ska band. Band. Yeah.
Yep, ska band. MTV rejected Super Freak by Rick James, and looking back, they're probably right, because he was.
Yep.
Because they did not fit the channel's carefully selected AOR format. There was the thing. MTV was kind of hiding behind, like, radio. Like, they were trying to use radio formats as an excuse. Well, we're not like Hot 97 in New York. You know, that's not our gig.
But I mean, that title is music television. It's not rock television. So, They were a little behind the times, but they eventually got they had to be forced into it, but yeah, they were a little close-minded.
They were. Now here's the clip you were talking about, D'Amato. Rock legend David Bowie questioned MTV's lack of black artists during an on-air interview with VJ Mark Goodman in 1983. MTV's original head of talent and acquisition, Carolyn Baker, who was black, had questioned why the definition of music had to be so narrow, as had a few others outside the network. The party line at MTV was that we weren't playing black music because of the research, said Baker years later. But the research was based on ignorance. We were young. We were cutting edge. We didn't have to be on the cutting edge of racism. Nevertheless, it was Baker who had personally rejected Rick James' video for Super Freak because he was black, because
it was too risque.
Yeah, it was half-naked women, and, quote, it was a piece of crap.
Ah.
As a black woman, I did not want that representing my people as the first black video on MTV. So, and again, Michael Jackson struggled. To resolve the struggle, Walter Yetnikoff, who was the president of CBS Records, who saved Billy Joel's career, denounced MTV in a strong, profane statement threatening to take away MTV's ability to play any of the record label's music videos. And CBS owned Columbia, and of course Columbia had a gigantic hunk of big-time artists. However, Les Garland, then acquisitions head, said he decided to air Jackson's Billie Jean video without pressure from CBS. This was contradicted by CBS, of course, blah, blah, blah. Do you think the music video... Now, this is not a knock on Michael Jackson Greeny by any stretch. He had his own demons later on in his life. But do you think MTV really did it for him? Do you think it qualified Thriller? Or do you think Thriller would have survived without the videos? Were the videos that big a help for him, you think?
No, because he was on so many other different formats out there. I think he would have been just fine. But, yeah, he definitely helped out MTV more than MTV helped him out.
Hmm. That is true. And, of course, like as we mentioned, Billie Jean was not added to the medium rotation, which is 2 to 3 airings per day. Until it, after it had already reached number one, I felt like it had 2 to 3 airings. Didn't it feel like it was on like 11 to 12 times a day? It's amazing how young you, when you're young, you think everything is bigger than it is. A month later, it went to heavy rotation, 1 week before the debut of Beat It. Both videos were played several times a day for the next 2 months. By early summer, the channel had ceased playing either song, but the impact was permanent by that point. Other black artists, obviously Little Red Corvette, 1999. As you mentioned, D'Amato, She Works Hard for the Money, which hopefully works for you. Heavy rotation on the channel. When Jackson's elaborate video for Thriller was released, now I remember this.
Mm-hmm.
I was home alone. It was like a Tuesday night. I think it was 7:30 on a Tuesday night. And I was home by myself. And I remember it was like wintertime. I thought I remember my Christmas tree being up, but I might be wrong. Nah, it makes no sense, right? Did it come out during Halloween? Anybody remember? D'Amato, do you remember? Did it?
I don't remember the month exactly.
I'm trying to remember. I could have sworn that my Christmas tree was up. And I remember having all my lights off, and I was all, like, pumped up. I had bought Thriller was the second album I ever bought. And it was because of MTV, I'm not going to lie. The first one was the soundtrack to The Empire Strikes Back. Duh. But the second one was Thriller. And then the first tape I ever bought was the We Are the World. It's pretty cool. And, of course, that was a big video a few years later. We'll get to that in a minute. And I remember literally being scared out of my mind. That video freaked me the fuck out. I'm not going to lie. D'Amato, what did you think when you first watched it?
I remember it was like an event. We got together with a couple of friends, actually. And it was real cool, real cool.
It was
just so different. It was like... It was just cool combined with the music, and it was like a real movie. It was just so original.
It really was. It really
so groundbreaking.
What do you think, Greeny? You didn't watch it live, right? You didn't watch one.
I didn't watch it on MTV, but I think it was on like Entertainment Tonight or something where they showed it, and like my parents had it on night. And I remember like they had Michael and probably Vincent Price on there too, talking about everything. And
right.
Who directed the video?
I was about to ask you guys that. Do either of you know? It was a legendary movie director. He directed one of the funniest movies in the history of cinema.
Mm.
It's John Landis?
John Landis, who of course directed my opinion, the second funniest movie of all time, which is Animal House. As you two know, the funniest movie ever is Caddyshack. But Animal House is a very close second, and Stripes is a very close third. So when Thriller came out, that was it. The floodgates opened and we were integrated, which was right. And then even by then, we got a lot of Latino. I remember DeBarge. I don't know. Were they black or were they Latino? I don't even remember now. He was so light-skinned. I'm not even trying to be, like, disrespectful. I legitimately don't even know. Was he Latino?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, I think he was. So bands like DeBarge and even Menudo and some of the Latino acts kind of got themselves integrated as well. So for the first few years, we had a lot of videos and we had a lot of – but that was about it really. Then there was MTV's first foray into something big. And that was – it took place. Let me see if I have the date. I do. The date is September 14th, 1984. Does anybody remember what went on that night?
It was live from Radio City Music Hall. It was the first MTV Video Music Awards.
Correct. It was the MTV's version of the Grammys, also called the Super Bowl for Youth. And it was at Radio City Music Hall. And of course, the first one memorable I believe the was that the first one when Madonna rolled around on the floor like a whore? I think that was that one, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
That was it.
Speaking of being in the bathtub, hey, D'Amato. She had that wedding gown, and she had her G-string, and holy shit, she was fucking hot. Now, this was huge, because now you're tapping, you're almost competing with the Grammys, which of course was a big deal, because back then the award shows were a big deal. So you're competing with the Grammys. But D'Amato, this was a brilliant idea, correct?
Oh, definitely.
You know?
Definitely. It gave the performers a chance to showcase their, besides just the Grammys. It was more of a showcase for the performances. If they had a new album to pump out or something. So,
exactly.
Definitely.
I am trying to look up. Let's see if we have a good. Do we have all the? Oh, good. They have it individually. By the way, tell me one of. We need to. Do they sell the astronaut trophy? Kind of like the Slammy? Because I would love one. Who wouldn't?
Oh, I would love one of those.
Fuck the Oscar. I want a Video Music Award trophy. All right. I'm gonna quiz you guys a little bit, and viewers, I wish this was a video one. Listeners at home or at work, see if you can guess these as well. I'm gonna fire off you guys the categories and see if you can remember who won them. D'Amato, I'll start with you. What was Video of the Year, the first year of the Video Music Awards?
I got nothing. Like a Virgin?
I'll give you the nominees. Herbie Hancock, Rocket, big one you mentioned. Thriller, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, Every Breath You Take, and You Might Think by the Cars.
Rocket.
You Might Think by the Cars. Now remember, that was the video. Remember, he was the little bug. Rick Ocasek's weird head
Rick
was
Ocasek,
on the...
Rick Ocasek, yep.
Yep. Best Male Video, Greeny. Billy Joel, Uptown Girl. Thriller again. Rocket again. China Girl by Bowie. And All Night Long by Lionel Richie.
I'm going to go with Lionel Richie.
David Bowie, China Girl.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great song, great video.
Great song, great video. Kind of a rebounding time for him. I remember that album. And MTV kind of boosted him because he went through kind of a weird... When he was doing those Berlin albums in the late 70s and he was freaking hopped up on heroin. And that album kind of got him into the mainstream again. So, big deal. D'Amato, Best Female Video. Bette Midler, Beast of Burden. Cyndi Lauper, Girls Just Want to Have Fun. Pat Benatar, Love is a Battlefield. Cyndi Lauper again, Time After Time. And your girl, Donna Summer, She Works Hard for the Money.
Cyndi Lauper.
Correct.
Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
That's right. Complete with that big fat sloppy pig. Captain Lou Albano in it. Guy, he couldn't even stop the video from winning video of the Best Female Video.
He took credit for the whole thing. It was
That's
all
right.
me.
That's right. It was all me. Well, he's got friggin' soda and beer stains on his belly. Best Group Video, Greeny. ZZ Top, Sharp Dressed Man. Your premiere video, Van Halen Jump. Huey Lewis in the News, The Heart of Rock and Roll. ZZ Top, Legs. And Every Breath You Take.
ZZ Top, Legs.
Correct. What a great video. Actually, yep. ZZ Top is awesome anyway. Didn't you see them recently, D'Amato?
Yeah,
last year?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Did you see him this year or was it last year you saw
him? Yeah, I think it was last year.
Yeah, they're on my bucket list. Anyway, those were the big ones. And they had Best Concept Video. Herbie Hancock actually won two that year. Best Stage Performance in a Video, your boy Mr. Lee Roth. Best Direction, ZZ Top won for that. Best Choreography, all that kind of jazz. And then other stuff. Then there was a Viewer's Choice one, and that went to Thriller. Then the Video Vanguard Award. That was the Beatles, Bowie, and Richard Lester, who, of course, was one of the early... directors and executives. So by the mid-80s, MTV was pretty much a staple. They were pretty much a staple by 1984. We also were expanding our VJs. I think by 85, 86, we saw more VJs stepping up to the fore. I'm going to fire some names off, gentlemen, and then I want you to help me with some that you remember. Former MTV VJs. Here's the ones I remember. Obviously, Alan Hunter. Adam Curry, who's that big gangly goof with the very bad mullet.
Yep.
Let me see some of these other names. Abby Gennett, don't remember her. Adrian Balon, Alexa Chung. Allison Stewart was a MTV VJ? I didn't know that. Ashley Simpson? What? Bill Bellamy. We'll talk about Bill Bellamy in a minute because
Bellamy is great.
Bill Bellamy rocked. And he helped promote one of the groundbreaking shows that emanated from MTV. We're going to get to that in the second segment. Because two shows spawned from MTV to handle other genres that, again, the network didn't want to kind of integrate into the regular routine. Obviously, Carmen Electra. China Cantner, which was, of course, Paul Cantner and Grace Slick's daughter. She was hot. Carolyn Heldman. Anybody remember her?
Vaguely.
She was like this hot, I don't know, she was like this college-y looking, like, you know, college sophomore with the sweater off the shoulder. And she was another one of those girl next doors that would take you back to her dorm and if you got her drunk. Oh, never mind. Booker. I forgot Booker was a, Chris Booker was a VJ, and then he had his own radio show. Anybody else? Any others that come to mind? D'Amato.
Carrie Wurr.
Oh,
Carrie Wurr.
Yum. Right before she went on Remote Control. Anybody remember Remote Control? First game show on
NBC. Yes, of course. Colin Quinn and Sandler.
That spawned the legends, yeah. Colin Quinn, Dennis Leary, Adam Sandler.
Yep.
That spawned all those legends.
Yep. And then the host, Ken Ober, who died.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
Yep. Bummer. Dan Cortez, remember him? Daisy Fuentes. Daisy Fuentes was hot.
Tony
from Seinfeld. Yeah.
Tony, yep. As you said, Colin Quinn. DJ Scribble. Was that right before he went on Sunday Night Heat?
Jeez.
Dr. Dre and Ed Lover. Hell yeah, baby.
All the best.
And then, of course, probably the iconic VJ of the second generation of MTV, and that would be the greatest mix of dark toned skin and sexy British accent.
Matt Pinfield.
The gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
The gorgeous downtown Julie Brown, who still looks hot now.
She does.
Oh, my God. She looks amazing. Another guy I want to bring up is Ricky Rackman. Because, and we'll talk about them. Well, we're gonna preview this quickly, and then we'll take a break. After a few years of pretty much the Video Music Awards and videos, MTV decided they needed to branch out in terms of genres. Because you couldn't just, as we mentioned, you couldn't just have the same pop songs over and over and over again. And Greeny, of course, you being a card-carrying metalhead, and obviously people loving hip-hop and rap, they didn't want to kind of envelop that into the regular everyday rotation. So they came up with two television ideas that made history. We will talk about those two things and more on this special PlaceToBeNation.com podcast celebrating the 35th birthday of MTV. Scott Criscolo, Jason Greenhouse, J. Arsenio D'Amato. We will be back right after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the pro wrestling only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
This is it. Welcome to MTV Music Television, the world's first 24-hour stereo video music channel. Just moments ago, all of the VJs and the crew here at MTV collectively hit our executive producer, Sue Steinberg, over the head with a bottle of champagne, and behold, a new concept is born. The best of TV combined with the best of radio. Now, starting right now, you'll never look at music the same way again. We'll be right back to introduce the other VJs and the other folks who are going to be with us on MTV.
I'm Alan Hunter. I'll be with you right after Mark. We'll be covering the latest in music news coast to coast here on MTV Music Television.
I'm Martha Quinn. The music will continue nonstop on MTV Music Television, the newest component of your stereo system.
Well, all right, I'm J.J. Jackson, and I'll be sitting in with the latest video music performances the way they were meant to be. That's in stereo on MTV Music Television. You'll never look at music the same way again.
Hi, I'm Nina Blackwood, and I'll be with you after JJ right here on MTV, the world's first video music channel, all day, all night, in stereo.
Are those guys the best? We all are so excited about this new concept in TV. We'll be doing for TV what FM did for radio, and let's get into it right now at MTV.
Welcome back, PlaceToBeNation.com, to this special podcast commemorating the 35th birthday of MTV. And boy, does MTV look so different now compared to what it was way back when. All right. PlaceToBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. Stephen Graham has his WWE rankings for July. And as we go into Brooklyn and get into SummerSlam, and of course the split today, or this week is week two of the new Raw and the new SmackDown Live. Newest episode of I did this with Zellner. I have to do it the right way. Exile on Bad Street. You know, because Parv tries to talk like, you know, some Doctor Who villain. But Exile on Bad Street is a tremendous podcast, and I got to tell Dr. G about this one. The 25 greatest angles in CWF history, Championship Wrestling from Florida. So, and that's right in Dr. G's wheelhouse. So check that out. The episode 29 of Exile on Bad Street, High on Sunshine, the 25 greatest angles in CWF history. So definitely check that out. Another great PWO show, Tag Teams Back Again, Episode 18, Putting Smiles on People's Faces. Kelly and Marty ring in the year of 1988 with an eclectic sampling of matches from the WWF. How about this, guys? British Bulldogs versus the Conquistadors. Strike Force versus the Hart Foundation. Jumping Bomb Angels versus the Glamour Girls. That's actually the match from the Royal Rumble. British Bulldogs and the Islanders from Philly. And et cetera, et cetera. So check it out. Tag Teams Back Again, Episode 18, Putting Smiles on People's Faces. Scott Keith's podcast, The Doom, very first podcast. He and Mr. Brian Bayless, who is, of course, our weekly Raw writer. their first foray into the podcast world, so check that out. Batman, The Killing Joke honors Source adds too much. It's Russell Sellers' newest Batman and newest comic books piece on PlacementNation.com. Speaking of the Hard Traveling Fanboys, their newest podcast, Countdown, Favorite Legacy Characters. Also, last week was PlacementNation's main event. I had with me a guy who you know on this pop feed very well, Mr. Glenn Butler, who was host of his Glenn Butler Hour Spectacular. And then Mr. Steve Willey joined us as well, and we talked about recap of Battleground and the first week's new shows, et cetera, et cetera. So check it out. PlacementNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. Click on the right side for both the Amazon link. All the podcasts are indexed, as well as the publications. JR and I, Mr. Rosero, we have 3 ebooks out right now, and they're all doing very well. All of our Vintage Vault Refresh reviews. The first ebook is The Federation Era. Every pay-per-view review from WrestleMania 1 to the 1992 Survivor Series. Actually, I'm going to talk about WrestleMania and wrestling in a minute because MTV plays a big part in that. So we're going to talk about that in a minute. The second ebook is all of the original run of Saturday Night's Main Event from 1985 to 1992, same run. And the third one is called The New Generation Part 1. It is every Vintage Vault refresh from the 1993 Royal Rumble to WrestleMania 12. So check that out as well. All of our P2B publications, you can click on the free ebooks on the right side of the screen. PlaceToBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. So guys, we're talking about MTV, and we really, before we move on to what I teased at the end of segment one, we're here talking about wrestling, and this isn't really the wrestling feed, but MTV, it was a big deal. We talked about Cyndi Lauper. The War to Settle the Score, all three of us remember that show very well. Simulcast on MTV and, I don't know, it was the MSG Networks or whatever they did. February 18th, 1985. Guys, big show.
Music to Vomit Huge. By. Piper. Yeah. Piper was amazing.
He was amazing. Those guys, like, ate that up. I mean, Vince, you know, he was trying to pump this big show on March 31st. And we're watching I'm watching the TNTs in 1985. You'll be getting to them, Greeny, if you can stomach your way through a dreadful late night force. It's like watching, you know, paint dry. Guys, was that smart for MTV? Was it smart for the WWF? Did Vince take a chance? Let me ask you, D'Amato. Did Vince take a chance, you think? You know, hey, this MTV thing is new. They need us. We need them.
Yeah, it was a huge chance, especially like when they had the VJs doing interviews before the matches. They were a little out of place, like a Doofy Allen Hunter.
I know, with his tux on.
Yeah, I'm sure it turned off. I'm sure it turned off like the real wrestling fans, but they definitely took a huge chance. Mm-hmm. But it worked out, obviously.
It clearly worked out. Greeny, what do you think?
I think this was really, really big for both of them. I mean, MTV was already pretty established with the VMAs. Already like on their second year, I believe. And it was great exposure for Vince and for his company too. Not just having the VJs there, but also having the celebrities there. I mean, I remember after the main event, you had, let me see if I can get this right. It was Andy Warhol, Danny DeVito, Joe Piscopo. I mean, at the time, those were like A-list celebrities.
Yep.
And they're being interviewed by Mean Gene. Now, whether or not, you know, that they were planted there by MTV or they actually went to the show because they were into the product, the wrestling product at the time, that was huge. I mean, you're getting A-list celebrities on MTV at a wrestling show. That's humongous.
I think Danny DeVito thought the same thing. and of course that led to WrestleMania 1 success, and then the WWF was off and running. But this obviously is not a wrestling podcast, but it does correlate to MTV. Now, as we teased during the break, by the late 80s, MTV was still doing, you know, big stuff. They were still playing incredible videos, and they were starting to now intertwine classic rock acts, Bowie, Dire Straits. Dire Straits, now there's a song, Money for Nothing, almost like MTV's anthem. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to be pretty, if you're MTV, you got to be pretty impressed that a pretty well-known act, I mean, Dire Straits is a great British kind of, you know, English rock band of the 70s. I wouldn't really say they're prog rock. I guess they're just playing classic pop. Great album, Brothers in Arms. But that song is promoting the network, in essence. You know, so huge for Money for Nothing. Journey, Rush, Linda Ronstadt, Genesis, Billy Squire, Aerosmith. I mean, Aerosmith came back from the dead with the Walk This Way with Run DMC. Moody Blues, John Mellencamp, Hall & Oates, Billy Joel, The Who, ZZ Top, etc. So a lot of classic rock acts took advantage of MTV as well. But can anyone think of the one guy who was a superstar in the music business pre-MTV, and then the minute everybody looked at him, he's a yacht rocker, boys.
Chris Cross?
Christopher Cross.
Christopher Cross.
Yeah, not the podcast. Although Aaron George could fit on any network. But, yeah, Christopher Cross, that solo, that album, Ride Like the Wind, Sailing. And then the minute people looked at him and he realized he had like a 13-year-old beard that had, you know, no holes in it because it wasn't growing all the way. And, you know, he was a little plump, not fat shaming here or anything, but, you know, he wasn't.
Fat shaming was big in the 80s. Today he probably would have been all right. But, yeah, back then it was like, we can't put this guy on TV. Yeah.
And they think, and a lot of people thought at the time, and I remember watching this on the 80s documentary on CNN, that MTV sacrificed steak for sizzle. In other words, they'll put a band up there that's utter trash, but they were all good looking, male and female. And Christopher Cross, who was a legitimately good musician, got left by the wayside because he looked like Captain Lou Albano's kid. Now, there are some exceptions. Duran Duran had the best of everything. You mentioned him earlier, D'Amato. Duran Duran were good looking guys and were great artists. But did you see a lot of examples of that, Greeny, even by the late 80s, where they sacrificed quality sacrificed steak for sizzle, even in the late 80s?
Yeah, I mean, I think Hall & Oates might be a good example of that, too, where their music was pretty mainstream, played on Top 40, played on stuff like PLJ and stuff like that.
Right.
And then they made these really, really corny videos. I mean, both guys, Hall & Oates aren't bad looking guys, but just really, really corny videos. Like when you hear the song on the radio, it sounds really good. But then when you see them with the video, it was just stupid.
It was.
Yeah.
They did some bad videos. No doubt.
Their whole city, he hated doing them
because they'd be up until like 5 a.m. making these shitty videos for, I'm sure they're getting paid well, but the guy would rather, be getting chicks and making music and stuff.
Yeah. And another guy who, and obviously I'm biased because he's probably my favorite guy of all time, but another guy who was not a big music video fan, but instead of doing what Hall & Oates did, he embraced it, was Billy Joel. Billy's one of the 70s greatest artists. I've seen him multiple times. Dr. G has seen him a gazillion times. And his music videos were actually good. But he was another guy who was not comfortable with, TV and cameras. He just wanted to play the piano. But his videos, unlike Hall & Oates, who pretty much tanked him, actually had good videos. So a lot of people were funny like that. We were talking about VJs. Now, besides the hot ones and the not-so-hot ones that we talked about earlier, there were some guest VJs. Adam Ant, Billy Idol, Phil Collins, Simon Le Bon, and Nick Rhodes, actually both of them of Duran Duran. Tina Turner, Eddie Murphy, Martin Short, Dan Aykroyd, Stephen Wright, all had guest VJ hours. Greeny, metalhead you are. Although this isn't a metal band, they're just good rock. A seminal moment in the history of this band occurred on MTV in 1983. Do you remember what it was?
In 83. Help me out here.
A four-letter band who has an army.
Kiss. Yes.
What did
they
do? When they
unmasked.
That's right. For the first time in the history of the band, on camera, no makeup. And then everyone saw them and said, "Put it back on."
Yes.
Paul Stanley is not a bad looking guy, but like Gene Simmons, Ace Frehley is fucking ugly.
Ace Frehley's the ugliest guy ever.
He is ugly. And he had the coolest makeup. I loved Ace Frehley's makeup. A man, mm-hmm. He looked like a caved in ashtray. And I mean, my favorite Kiss moment of all time is earlier than this, and I'll just mention it briefly since we're talking Kiss. D'Amato, you'll know what I'm talking about. I think you do, Greeny, but D'Amato, I know you know what I'm about to talk about. There was a Halloween episode of a NBC talk show back in the day called it was called Tomorrow with Tom Snyder or the Tom Snyder Show, something like that. It was Halloween 77 probably, 77 or 78. I found it at when I was in college. This group called Greater Promotions. They were this like record memorabilia, you know, bootleg group, and they used to bounce around the Northeast. They might have come into New York, and you know they had memorabilia, you know, and bootlegs and tapes and that kind of stuff. And I found this tape at the Kiss Vision stand, and they were these guys. They were very well known around the Northeast. They bounced around Springfield, Providence, Boston, you know, suburbs, Hartford, and the burbs here in Connecticut. Christmas Eve, a Halloween episode of the Tom Snyder Show, and Ace Frehley and Peter Criss were shit-faced. And Tom Snyder's trying to interview them. I think Destroyer had just come out. And they're Peter Criss is like fumbling. He sounds like Rotella. I mean, he was a mumbling mess. And Ace Frehley's talking about plumbing and cleaning my pipes and everything. And he's just, I mean, it's like D'Amato only drunk. And and Paul Stanley's trying to like traffic cop them because he was always like the diplomat of the band. And he's trying to like get out of this mess and everything. And Gene Simmons literally is staring at Ace Frehley, not moving his eyes or head, with a look like, as soon as we go to commercial, I'm going to fucking put your head through the goddamn camera. I mean, it was one of the funniest Kiss moments ever. I just had to mention that story because we talked about Kiss. Anyway, legendary moment in 1983 on MTV. Now, let me get to finally the tease I did before the break. As we talked about, guys, MTV was very straightforward with rock, pop. We were slowly getting into some R&B, some soul. Some, you know, some like light pop, you know, a little yacht rocky stuff. But two genres were burgeoning in the late 80s, and they were heavy metal and hip hop rap. Now, Greeny, of course, you back in the day, and D'Amato, all of us, we saw our share of Run to the Hills and Number of the Beast, and, you know, obviously one of my favorite videos of all time, Ozzy's Bark at the Moon. That video's fucking great. Shot in the Dark. Oh my God, the video's awesome. But they weren't on a lot. And then you had these other bands that were slowly coming to the surface in the mid 80s. And you know the one band that I'm thinking of right now, Greeny, one of your favorite bands of all time, a band by the name of Metallica, who burgeoned, bubbled to the surface in the mid 80s, but there were no videos for them, no place for them to play. So a band like them, and then you have bands in the late 80s like Run DMC, like the Fat Boys, like LL Cool J. Thank you. Correct. They needed an outlet. So let's get to the metal first. Heavy metal found its niche, and on April 18th, Saturday night, April 18th, 1987, what debuted, Greeny?
Headbangers Ball.
What a tremendous fucking show. Hosted by Ricky Rackman. They would play heavy metal, hard rock late at night from well-known and more obscure artists. The show offered and became famous because of a stark contrast to top 40 videos during the day. Many of the videos that aired on the first incarnation of the series would find a home on the similarly themed Metal Mania on sister channel VH1 Classic later on in the decade. Greeny, what bands, singularly from Headbangers Ball, did you get exposed to on that show?
You got bands like Wasp, Motley Crue, Poison, who at the time these bands weren't considered, like now they're not considered heavy metal, but back then they were. Bands like that, occasionally like a Bon Jovi video. And then as you get into like 89 and 90, you get your Metallica, Slayer, Megadeth, Anthrax, those type of bands.
Yep.
But yeah,
bands like Wasp and Judas Priest, bands who like I might have heard of, but wasn't familiar with their music. Those are that's the type of stuff that you would see on Headbangers Ball. Maybe some Whitesnake, stuff like that.
Yep. They did more live interviews with bands. It was actually let me correct myself. When the show started, it was briefly hosted by Kevin Seal. Remember him?
Mm-hmm.
He was one of those guys you wanted to punch in the face. He had that Miz look.
Yeah.
Then Adam Curry hosted it. God, you want to talk about out of fucking place? Good grief.
They threw a leather jacket on him and, you know, tried to make him cool, but he was far from it.
I know. And then obviously Ricky Bachman took over as well. D'Amato, any bands kind of jumped out at you when you watched Headbangers Ball?
Not really. My fandom, I like more the earlier 80s stuff, like Priest, who are already established, so not too much like Greeny saying guys like Slayer and stuff. That's a little late 80s.
Okay.
That's not really my wheelhouse. But I'm more like Maiden and Priest, bands that they were already playing those videos in the mid 80s. So
right.
I just stuck with them. I didn't really pick up any metal faves like in the later 80s and 90s.
Right. Okay. So that was the one big show that launched in 1987 to kind of give us a separate genre. The other one, easily one of another tremendous idea, launched the following year on August 6th.
1988. Mm-hmm. Yo, MTV Raps.
Correct. That was 2 hours, August 88 to August 95. First hip-hop show on the network based on the original MTV Europe show aired 1 year earlier. Yo MTV Raps produced a lively mix of rap videos, interviews with rap stars, live and studio performances on Fridays, and comedy. The show also yielded a Brazilian version called Yo MTV and broadcast on MTV Brazil. Do you guys remember who the first host of Yo MTV Raps was? D'Amato.
No, it wasn't Ed and Dre
yet. It was not Ed and Dre yet, no. Let's put it this way. He used to enjoy a nice cold 45 with Lando Calrissian.
Ah, Billy D. Williams.
Billy D.
Well, he was the guy. He was Lando, but who was the other guy in the commercial, in the Colt 45 commercials?
LL?
Fab Five Freddy.
Oh, Fab Five Freddy.
Fab Five Freddy. Then later, Dr. Dre and his Demi's high school friend, Ed Lover. And of course, we're not talking Dr. Dre, NWA Dr. Dre. We're talking the other Dr. Dre. Could you imagine there's two Dr. Dre's in this world? It's incredible. They hosted together on weekdays. Fab Five Freddy did the weekends. Mm-hmm. Yep. On the weekday.
This was on during the day, too. It was on after school for me because I was still in elementary school, yep, going into, yeah, middle school. And it was on like the between like 3 and 5 p.m. block.
Yeah, afternoon, huh?
Which is a big, mm-hmm, deal. That's a big deal.
Yeah, huge.
In the middle of the day because, you know, let's be honest, hip-hop, rap videos, like the girl said, Carolyn Baker said in our first segment about Rick James, you know.
Yeah, I would say in 86 they broke through with the rap videos, and unfortunately it was the Beastie Boys, you know, white rappers that kind of broke it through in 86 and Run DMC Walk This Way.
And Run DMC, yeah.
Both came out in 86 and Walk This Way, unfortunately, because it was with Aerosmith, so. But they kind of broke through in 86 and eventually, you know, all black rappers, they started playing more and more. So
that's right. I loved Beasties were awesome. In 1987, Ted Demme, who did a lot of these shows, and Peter Doherty developed the program. The year after that, Run DMC hosted the pilot episode in the U.S. Also featured in the pilot were DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, Eric B. and Rakim. Their video for the title track of the album Follow the Leader, and was the first video to be shown on Yo MTV Raps. The pilot was one of the highest rated programs to ever air on MTV by that point. Wow. Only the Video Music Awards and Live Aid received greater ratings. Shinehead's Chain Gang was the first video to be shown during a regular season episode. Meanwhile, Ice-T's High Rollers was the first video to be played during the weekday show. The classic Yo MTV Raps logo was created by early graffiti writer Dr. Revolt. And the animated show Open was produced by Nigel Cox Hagen and animated by Bo Tardy. Well, you mentioned, Greeny, a lot of the artists that came from there, and you too as well, D'Amato. I mean, we're talking LL Cool J and the Fat Boys and Run DMC. Young MC, Bust a Move.
Young MC, yep.
Bismarcky, baby. Just a friend. You know why I liked him? Because he had a Notre Dame and Georgetown sweats in the video. So he was right at my wheelhouse, baby, because he had my two favorite teams at the time when I was a kid. So I had no problem with lazy.
Surprised they found the size. Jeez.
I know. I know. No kidding. So by the early 90s, MTV was really blowing up. They also did a lot of, obviously, they did a lot of live concerts. I mentioned one. They did Live Aid, July 13th, 1985. Do you remember Live Aid, D'Amato? Did you watch it?
Definitely.
Yeah. There were two of them, of course. One was at JFK Stadium in Philly. The other was at...
They simulcast on the radio. I remember it was an all-day thing, and I was just trying to catch as much as I can. I remember it was during the summer. I was on a beach listening on the radio, and then home trying to catch some of the video. It was bananas.
Yeah, it was. And I was pumped because it was the first time since they broke up, and you can close your screen if you'd like, first time since they broke up that Led Zeppelin actually played live. They played it. They played at Wembley, and I forgot who played drums. I actually think Phil Collins played drums.
I was just going to mention, Phil Collins did both shows.
Yeah.
He did London, and then he flew to Philly.
Isn't that fucking crazy? That guy was a machine in the 80s.
Yeah.
That guy was a machine. I'm trying to see, don't they have it on, can't you buy like the whole concert? Is it on DVD somewhere?
Yeah, you can buy it. And then they have like all the clips split up on YouTube.
Yeah. That's right.
But yeah, that'll be a nice collection to have on DVD.
Oh, God. Cool.
Yeah. So Live Aid was a big deal. They simulcast that. Another show I don't want to ignore. Two shows I don't want to ignore that started in the late 80s. Dial MTV, which started in 1986, was a top 10 music video countdown show for which we could call a phone number. And I used to call religiously for a myriad of videos. The other one was 120 Minutes, which debuted in 1986. And that was kind of like you were talking about underground bands.
Yeah, your alternative college radio type stuff.
Bands like The Replacements, Jesus and Mary Chain, The Verve, Weezer. And this was late 80s into the early 90s. Oasis, early Oasis, Stone Roses, Smashing Pumpkins. But let's get to the 90s now. They were all very, as we talked about, the first decade of MTV was obviously a lot of rock, a lot of pop, and then the splinter shows of Yo MTV Raps and Headbangers Ball. But by 1991, you want to talk about jumping into the deep end of the pool. We all know what video was released in 1991, and the whole network changed.
It all changed.
It all changed. When Smells Like Teen Spirit was released, and that was, of course, Nirvana off of Nevermind, with the little baby and his little wee-wee and the $10 bill on the hook, everything changed. And the network changed. Now, Greeny, you're being the 90s boy. Did you see the tone change in the network?
Yeah. Just to talk about Smells Like Teen Spirit for a second. Friend of mine had gotten a CD, and we were getting ready to go to the mall. We were over his house getting ready, and he played it, and I heard it. I was like, what is this? He's like, oh, it just came out. Someone was telling me about it. I'm like, holy shit. I've never heard anything like this before. And like, I listened to, Metallica and Megadeth and all that stuff. And it was just really, really dark. And then a couple of days later, I have MTV on it. Here's the video. And, oh my God, I was like, what is going on? Things are really changing. And just the way Kurt Cobain was dressed, you had never seen that before with the t-shirt over the long sleeve t-shirt. And he just looked like a dirty, sweaty mess, and Dave Grohl is headbanging while playing drums. Like, oh my God.
I know. What happened? And the bands like Poison and LA
Skid
Guns.
Row and all those guys.
Got swallowed up. Now, D'Amato, like me, you were a product of the 80s and a product of great 80s music. How were you feeling when MTV evolved into this new genre that literally came out of a basement and now took over the network?
Nah, I was cool with it. When it comes to music, I'm open-minded. As anyone could see, I attended various concerts from various genres, so I'm definitely open-minded. I'm like, oh, these fucking flannel wearing idiots, they don't play rock like us. I'm not like that at all.
Take a shower.
I'm open to everything. But for me, I was definitely more loving the hip-hop in the late 80s and especially the early 90s. I was getting into more heavy hip-hop as opposed to the grunge stuff. But I don't mind it at all. I was just loving everything. MTV, I don't mind change, especially in music. So I was loving all the different types, but for me it was more hip hop stuff. Okay. I was getting into.
Right. Now, obviously, Nirvana then would splinter off a myriad of bands from the Northwest, Pacific Northwest, Alice in Chains, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden. They frequently aired videos from what was known as the Buzz Bin, Nine Inch Nails, Tori Amos, hot, but God, stop whining.
Yes.
PM Dawn. Love PM Dawn. Arrested Development.
Tennessee.
Bjork, a crazy bitch. And and another band, and I know Greeny. I don't know, Greeny. I look at this band, I think this is not a Greeny band. The Gin Blossoms.
I love the Gin Blossoms.
Did you really?
Are you kidding? No, yeah, I
don't hate the Gin Blossoms.
Man, yeah. Oh, I love them.
No, I don't hate the Gin Blossoms. I like the Gin Blossoms. 1993, more alternative rock acts. STP, love Stone Temple Pilots. Soul Asylum, I was a big Soul Asylum fan. I actually saw them live.
Great band.
Love Rage, Marilyn Manson, Tool, Beck, Radiohead, The Pumpkins, Weezer. I love Blind Melon. I used to blast. Dr. G's gets so pissed at me because in my car, see, I had a 86 Plymouth, so I didn't have like a tape deck or anything. So I had a boombox in my car connected to the cigarette lighter, and I used to play No Rain literally every like half hour of my car. And I swear to God, Dr. G wanted to jump out of the fucking car on the highway. But I love that song. I love those guys. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Shannon Hoon. Untapped potential if he just could shake the, you know.
Acid.
Yeah, and everything else. died on a tour bus in New Orleans, man. Fucking sucks.
Yep.
Then, like, Green Day came and The Offspring, No Doubt, Boss Tone, Sublime. So, like you said, D'Amato, by the mid-90s, MTV was everywhere in terms of its music videos and its in terms of its diversity. They had everything on now. Then 1997. That was the year that people like D'Amato and I, maybe you, Greeny, could say was the year rock died. Beginning in late 97 and going into 98, MTV kind of phased out the rock videos and kind of stuck to more pop, hip-hop, R&B. The rock-related categories on the Video Music Awards were down to one. Mm-hmm. And what were you feeling at that point? And then the second part of it, and this is the thing we obviously were going to talk about. By 1997 to 2000, MTV played 44% less videos. And then in came the shows. Yeah. Why do you think, D'Amato, they got out of the video playing business?
I think a big moment was in 92 when The Real World premiered and it hit real big. So and that's like a reality show where you could produce it kind of cheaply and you don't got to deal with the music executives and all that nonsense. So there was something that, where they could splinter off to. That was a big moment, I think, when The Real World hit and opened the doors for other types of programming.
Mm. What do you think, Greeny? Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree completely with that. And I think by then, too, people had more – what's the word I'm looking for? All the music that was around, they were able to access it easier. I mean, like the internet and stuff wasn't – well, yeah, I guess the internet was around in like 97 and stuff like that. And maybe, you know, downloading stuff illegally too.
But also, I mean, was there reality shows on TV starting yet at that time?
Well, let's see. Real World was 92.
Well, on like ABC and CBS.
Oh, I don't know. Well, Survivor was really the first one. And when did Survivor start?
Nah, that was 2001. Man.
Yeah.
Was it later on?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, some executives said, well, you know what? We've, you know, done this music thing to death. You know, all these bands are established now and everything. Let's try something different. And Real World, I think, was probably just something to try out. And when they saw that it was a huge success, okay, I want five more just like it.
Yeah. And we started getting rid of music videos and added more of this original programming. Now, another iconic MTV show started in 1998. And that was, of course, Total Request Live, otherwise known as TRL, which pretty much was nothing more than Carson Daly and a bunch of screaming chicks. But you could see it from downtown, from Manhattan, from the MTV studios with all the glass windows, and it took up, you know, the walls were glass, so everybody could see in, and everybody could yell and scream, "Yay! Look, it's Mariah Carey." By then, I stopped watching. I was done. But then VH1 started, and that kind of got people like you and I, D'Amato, into the, back to
the VH1 was around for a while, Scott. It came on in the late 80s.
Let me look that up.
Yeah, they were.
I don't remember VH. I don't think I had VH1 early on.
Definitely.
They would play. Yeah. It was definitely around sooner because they would play more soft rock stuff like Michael Bolton and like Chris Isaak and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. Probably around
VH1.
Yeah.
VH1 actually launched New Year's Day 1985. Wow.
Wow.
I did not have VH1. Mm-hmm. I did not have VH1 when I started on my cable system. Mm-hmm. VH1's aim was to focus on the lighter, softer side of popular music, including such musicians as Olivia Newton-John, Kenny Rogers, Carlos. Well, Billy was on there too. Oh my God. Here were the early on-camera personalities for VH1. Now, mind you, we're spinning the bands I just mentioned. Chicago, Olivia Newton-John, Kenny Rogers. Mm-hmm. Bowser from Sha Na Na.
Oh, my.
Scott Shannon, who at the time was Z100, and now he's on CBS.
He's on CBS, yep.
Yep. Frankie Crocker, who was the program director for BLS. I think that's a Boston station. And the I-Man.
I miss you.
Could you imagine
was
him
he
sitting
really?
There cutting lines while fucking while introing Carly Simon and Kenny Rogers?
How's your donkey go? Hey, are we gonna play some Nappy Head?
Anybody want to donkey punch Carly Simon? sorry.
Look at those Pointer Sisters. Punch a nappy head.
Oh, man. All right. So by the 2000s, MTV branched off, did their own thing. Pretty much videos were gone. VH1 Classic started, and that became kind of like our place for us old farts to watch music videos. As mentioned, we've had Remote Control, great show, MTV's Fear, then there was, what other games were there? Tom Green Show.
The Tom Green Show, so good.
Oh, my God, good. Yes.
And then, of course, guys,
1997.
Yep, right. Beats the Butthead. Yes! Judas Priest rules. People used to laugh because the radio station I worked at in the early late 90s, one of the guys in the department and I would just call each other turd burglar, and no one knew what the fuck we were talking about. I love insane people's heads. God, what other shows? Then, of course, there was, Jackass, of course.
2000, yeah, Jackass.
Jackass,
yep.
The Blame Game, Web Riot, Say What Karaoke. And then, of course, the big one in 2000, another big one in 2002, the Osbournes, Ozzy and that fucking shit show. Punk'd, Pimp My Ride, Newlyweds Nicky Jam. I'm not mentioning that. Let's see. Ashley Simpson. No, I'm not talking about that either. Eighth and Ocean. Laguna Beach. The Real Orange County. Next. The Hills. Two-A-Days. My Super Sweet 16. Parental Control. Viva La... I don't think I watch any of these shows. Viva La Bam. I did watch Viva La Bam. A Shot at Love with Tila Tequila. Wow, her bisexuality planned. Oh, male and female contestants were vying for love. Paris Hilton, Snoop Show, Dog After Dark, and then of course the big one. The big one in 2009, gentlemen, Jersey Shore.
Yep.
So, let's look at now, Greeny. What is the future of MTV as it's 35 years old?
Not good. they've been on a downward spiral for probably the past 15 years. I mean, you know, I don't know if it's because we're old, you know, we're three old farts and, you know, everyone from our generation just grew up watching one thing, but the people from this generation love what's on MTV now, you know, generation clash. But, I think that with music, with modern music as bad as it is now, or at least, you know, I think it's bad, music videos, you know, it used to be so easy where you can just have, you know, a band or, you know, a chick like Pat Benatar just looking badass, you know, filming on a single filming on a single camera, a couple of lights. And now everything is all about fancy cars. And you know, million girls in bikinis and throwing money and, you know, just all this shit. You know, it used to be just so simple.
Yep.
And now it's just a whole big production. I mean, I understand. You know, artists are losing money because of you know, illegal downloading and this and that, and they gotta, you know, up ticket prices and all that crap. And I understand all that stuff, but you know. Making a music video for, you know, $5 million when you can do it for $500,000, it's just not worth it.
Mr. D'Amato, your thoughts. And then we're gonna have a little fun with some other goofy shows before we head out. But what do you see the future of MTV?
Unfortunately, I have no idea. Whatever the millennial generation, whatever they like. I mean, what is, like, their most popular show now? I mean, I can't say I don't watch. I do keep up with The Real World season 37 just because I watched all of them. And, you know, it's not as good as it was, and I watch The Real World Challenge. But otherwise, I don't check out too much. What are the most popular shows on MTV? Like Teen Mom and stuff. I couldn't answer. So I guess just continue to pump out whatever the millennials like, and just continue to pump it out. I mean, as far as music, it's not going to happen. I don't know. They still do the video awards. I don't know why. And you know, obviously, they don't play the videos. That's an obvious joke. But then again, you got to roll with the times. I mean, right now, if an artist is putting out a new album, they could just put a video out to YouTube and download it, you know, on Facebook in 2 seconds. Obviously, you don't got to go to MTV to watch it. So I have no idea what the future holds. Just more crappy entertainment programming that hopefully they can catch a couple eyes. And they're just like any other network that's trying to do the same thing. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They got a couple of original shows in there, but I don't think those hit, like Scream or something. I don't watch any of those, so I don't know. But I don't even know if they hit or not. So.
Mm.
I couldn't tell you.
No, I don't know either. I mean, it's still very popular.
I wouldn't say very, but it's
popular enough, mm-hmm. I suppose.
Yeah.
And who knows how long it'll take before it becomes almost outdated to the millennials now, you know?
Right.
Now, we talked about some iconic moments in the history of the network, but here are the ones that they probably don't want us to talk about. MTV has edited a number of music videos to remove references to drugs, sex, violence, weapons, racism, homophobia, and or advertising. Many music videos aired on the channel were censored, moved to late-night rotation, or banned entirely from the channel. In the 1980s, parent media watchdog groups such as the Parents Music Resource Center criticized MTV over certain music videos that were claimed to have explicit imagery of Satanism. MTV developed a policy refusal to air videos that may depict devil worship or anti-religious themes. This policy led MTV to ban music videos such as Jesus Christ Pose by Soundgarden in 1991 and Megalomaniac by Incubus in 2004. However, controversial Marilyn Manson was among the most popular rock bands on MTV in the late 90s and first half of 2000s. And then, gentlemen, a moment for me that will always make me smile and live in MTV infamy. One word. Dice. The 1989 MTV Video Music Awards, where he pretty much whipped it out and pissed all over it. Fuck yeah, baby! Did his usual adult nursery rhymes, hickory dickory dock, this chick was blah, blah, blah. You know, Jack and Jill went up the hill, each with a buck and a quarter. Jill came down with $250. Wow, she was cheap. And he had a lifetime ban. Didn't come back till 2011. Did you know, guys, that the music video for the song Cradle of Love originally had scenes from Dice's film The Adventures of Ford Fairlane,
which I did spend
money and see in the theater. and they excised the clips. So now this one's funny. In the wake of a controversy following a child burning down his house after allegedly watching Beavis and Butthead, producers moved the show from its original 7 o'clock time slot to a late night 11 o'clock slot. Also, Beavis's insane tendency to flick a lighter and scream the word fire was removed from new episodes, and controversial scenes were removed from existing episodes before rebroadcast. Because, you know, we as Americans are fucking stupid and can't tell that it's, you know.
Supposed to. Unfortunately, some kids set the house on fire. And... Yeah.
Some of the edits were so extensive that when series creator Mike Judge compiled his collection DVDs, he found out that some of those episodes may not even exist actually in their original form. Here's one that makes me laugh. Do you guys remember a show called Dude, This Sucks?
Maybe.
Well, they did a pilot for a show called Dude, This Sucks was canceled after teens attending a taping at the Snow Summit Ski Resort in January 2001 were sprayed with liquid fecal matter by the group...
you can't make it up.
By the group, no. By the group, the Shower Rangers, which I think was D'Amato's Boy Scout troop.
Come on.
the Shower Rangers. The teens later sued. No shit. Shower literally, Rangers. Lots of shit. MTV later apologized and said that the segment would not air. Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
The Golden Shower Rangers.
That's right. And then, of course, there were plenty of controversies about Jersey Shore because people would pick fights with them on purpose on the boardwalk and, you know, everybody.
Hey, it was an insult to us Italians.
Yeah, all
hey,
bunch
we don't act like those retards.
I mean, the one guy, though, who was the one big dude? The original guys.
Ronnie.
Yeah. He was so fucking roided. His freaking nipples were pointing in the other direction. It was like, it's the best. He was like so mangled. I like Paulie D. He was cool. He was my favorite. Like Mike the situation, I just wanted to fucking punch him in the face. But Paulie D I liked, probably because he was a Rhode Islander. So MTV had its share of controversies throughout the years. Probably my favorite is the 1989 Video Music Awards because fucking Dice is Dice, man.
Dice, yep.
Guys, this was fun. We're going to do more music stuff because I love doing music stuff. Our good friend Steve Willie came up with a pretty cool idea. Now, this is not etched in stone, but this might be something fun. Now, you know, Greeny, of course, you are part of the crew for the Raw Live Watch shows on the regular wrestling or a regular iTunes feed of PlaceMeNation.com. Steve Willie, who sadly was supposed to join us tonight but couldn't, came up with a funny idea that we would do a block of videos and do like Beavis and Butthead, except not act like two jamokes.
Speak for yourself.
And I.
Just one.
I'll find a Shower Rangers video for you, D'Amato, okay?
No, gotta do Billy Squire, Rock Me Tonight.
Rock Me Tonight, yeah. Yeah, he had a shower. That might be something we might think about, is occasionally we'll get a bunch of guys and we'll have to do like a block of like five or six videos, maybe do like a quick podcast, like 40 minutes, and do that. That might be something I have to think about. Maybe this podcast will spawn some thoughts about it, but
it's going to spawn something.
There's a lot of stuff here that's being spawned. Mr. D'Amato, pleasure as always.
Thanks, buddy. Oh, that was awesome. Thanks, guys.
Always good to talk to you. Well, I'll see you in Brooklyn in a month. Okay. Greeny.
3 weeks.
Move back.
Thank you, man.
Move back. Enough of this.
I know. I missed you guys.
You know what? I'm booking you live on this show now. You're on the next main event. We'll talk off air.
I got to confess, Jason, whenever I get together with Scott and his guys, Scott and G, they always say, oh, I wish Greeny was here. And then they look at me instead of you, D'Amato.
I never do that. Oh, my God. Okay, just Joe.
They always say, I wish Greeny was here. And they're kind of like a hint, instead of you, asshole. You know, but they're stuck with me, man.
Oh, my God.
I'm not going anywhere.
Oh my God! You're so
any chili left over?
I actually do have some chili here. We already heard you earlier. Clearly, you don't need any. But we'll never be on the pop feed again. All right. For Jason Greenhouse, for J. Arsenio D'Amato, I'm Scott Criscolo. MTV will always live in our hearts and minds, even if no one's watching it at this point. Happy birthday, MTV! 35 years from now, you may not even be on the air, but we will remember. Video killed the radio star.
Love plus one.